today we'll take up certain aspects of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So let's take a look at the Rambam's formulation in Hilchos Chametz Matzah, Perek Shvi, the first couple of halachas over there. The Rambam says, Mitzvah Zaseh Shel Torah. That's the first thing you need to know, that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is the mitzvah Zaseh of the Torah. It's a positive command. It's not a rabbinic ordinance. L'saper benisim v'niflos shenasu l'avoseinu v'mitzrayim, to tell of the miracles and wondrous things that were done for our fathers in Egypt. V'leil chamishasa b'nisan, on the night of the 15th of Nisan. Shenemar, as it says, zochar asa yom hazeh, remember this day. Asher yitzasam v'mitzrayim. So the way the Torah expresses this mitzvah, of course, again, from the simple reading of the Torah Shebichsav, you wouldn't be able to figure out that this is what it means. That's a futile endeavor. You really cannot. The Torah Shebichsav was written in a way which was designed to be elucidated through the Torah Shebal Peh. And it's an impossibility to prove, just from the way it's written, from the plain meaning of the words. All it says is remember. Remember can mean just about anything. Remember the day. So you have Memorial Day, we remember certain things. Independence Day, we remember certain things. But nobody in America would think that we have an obligation to sit around and engage in discussion about what took place. If you want to, you can do it, that's fine. But let's assume there's a civic obligation to remember. So that's about it. So it's really through the Torah Shebal Peh that we know what it's talking about. However, what the Rambam is pointing out is where the idea is alluded to. The idea is alluded to in the word Zachar. And the word Zachar is not simply to remember, but to declare the holiness of the day. That's what you see by Shabbos, Zachar Siyama Shabbos. Of course, what's the mitzvah of Zachar with regard to Shabbos? That's another mitzvah saseh. There it doesn't have the same meaning. The Rambam is not suggesting that you have to really be mesaper to talk about creation, although that's a key in Shabbos. That's the whole purpose of Shabbos. But the specific mitzvah is Kiddush. That's Kiddush Hayom. The mitzvah of Zachar on Shabbos is Kiddush Hayom, which means to declare the holiness of the day, which we fulfill in tefillah and over wine on Friday night. So here too, when it says Zachar es Hayom, Asher Yitzasim Mitzrayim, so it means to say that you should elucidate the specific nature of the day, what the day is all about. And here, what the day is all about is that it has to do with the phenomenon of the Exodus, that God redeemed us from Egypt. Okay. So, basically he's established the fact that there's a positive command of Sipur. Now, in this formulation, what draws your attention? Just that sentence. Review the sentence. Mitzvah Zaseh Shel Torah, L'Saper Benisim V'Niflos, Shenasu L'Saper Mitzrayim. What is the Rambam emphasizing over here? What's the essence of the Sipur here? What is the essential object of the Sipur? I wouldn't have formulated it this way. That's because I'm lacking the point that the Rambam is making. I wouldn't have. How would you have formulated it? If I was formulating the idea, the mitzvah, I would have said that at this point, this night, it's a special mitzvah to discuss the story, to tell the story of the Exodus. Now you may say, well, okay, well, what about the miracles? The miraculous aspect. Is that essential or not essential? I would have said, look, you're telling the story. If miracles occur, that's part of the story. But let's just, like anything else, you'd have to decide how much of the story do I have to tell in order to fulfill it. Can I tell it in a very brief way? Do I have to include a lot of detail? How much detail? These are important questions. That's an important thing. How do I fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story? As we'll see, it's not so simple. And or is it enough to just read the Haggadah? If I just read the Haggadah that night, did I fulfill the mitzvah as the Rambam is describing it? Well, we'll see. You have to study the Rambam and then see whether the full story of the Exodus is contained in the Haggadah, or is the Haggadah something else? Maybe the Haggadah is just a guide. and you have to utilize other resources besides the Haggadah? That's an interesting question. Is the Haggadah sufficient? Is that the only text that I need, or do I need other resources? Why did the Rambam put the emphasis on the Nisim and the Niflaos to discuss the miracles? The emphasis should be to discuss the Exodus, the story of the Exodus. And it seems you could read this and come to the conclusion that you don't even, it's not so much telling the story of the Exodus, it's just that telling the story of the miracles. Although that's not the case, obviously, but the way he formulates it is the complete emphasis is on the miracles that occurred. But I'm saying, isn't the mitzvah to discuss the Exodus? Now, in discussing the Exodus, so of course you'll mention miracles because they're part of the story, but they're no different than any other aspects of the story. It would seem not. It would seem if you left out certain, there's a lot of details, if you left out certain details, you could tell it with more details, with less details. Then that wouldn't mean that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah, because the mitzvah can be fulfilled on different levels. But if you did not discuss the miracles, then you're lacking, according to the Rambam, you're lacking in the mitzvah itself. And that's why. Why is that so important? Isn't the important thing that we were slaves in Egypt? We were oppressed, and God intervened, and God caused us to be freed from Egypt, and that's the whole story. That's the whole story. Why do I have to discuss the miracles? That's something which I believe is unexpected. I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought about the whole idea that that God was compassionate towards us, that God related to us, that God redeemed us, and so on and so forth. But there seems to be something very unique over here that we have to focus on. The question is the essence the story, and the miracles are accidental to it? That's part of the story, of course, but the essence is the story. It seems from the Rambam that the story of the Exodus is just a backdrop for certain miracles, and the emphasis is really on the miracles, which is completely different than what I would have expected. I would have thought that the essence is really the Exodus, and the miracles are a backdrop. The way the Rambam is formulating it, he's putting the emphasis on the miracles. Of course, if the whole purpose, we're talking philosophically now, if the whole purpose is really to discuss miracles, this is not the only situation of miracles. There are many, many other miracles in the Torah itself, and then later on in Tanakh. So what is so unique about these miracles? Let's continue a little bit in the Rambam. Then he says, "Umenayin shebalei al chamisha asar." How do we know that it's on the night of the 15th? Talmud Lomar v'igar t'levincha b'yom ahu lemor bavur zeh bavur zeh. So he says it's derived. Again, it can't be derived directly in the ordinary sense. It means to say that we know it through the Torah Shebal Peh, but after the Torah Shebal Peh has elucidated it, then we can look back and we can see the reference. It's a reference point in the Pasuk. The Pasuk is referring to it because the Pasuk says, "V'igar t'levincha," you shall tell it to your children, "b'yom ahu lemor," on this day, saying, "Bavur zeh," because of this. Now, it implies that there's something in front of you. That when you tell the story, you have reference. It's sort of a show-and-tell kind of story. That is, you can't just tell the story in an abstract way. It's related to certain concrete objects, the objects of mitzvah, that are observed on that night, which are all based upon the remembrance, elucidation of the Exodus. So it's bavur zeh, because of this. So what does it mean, because of this? B'shoah sheyesh matzah umor munachim lefanecha. It's at the time when you have the matzah and moror in front of you. So you're telling the child, bavur zeh, because of this, because of the matzah, because of the moror, and so on and so forth. It's the story has to be told with reference to the practical implications of the entire Exodus story, that it resulted in forming a nation and which follows a certain system, which is based upon mitzvos, and these are the mitzvos that we observe. So now we have the ability to fix the time, because if the story is being told in conjunction with the mitzvahs, now all we need to know is what is the zman, what is the time of those mitzvahs. Of course, this is all recited in the Haggadah itself. The Haggadah, at the beginning, it is, how do we know when? The Yochel Merish Chodesh, that's in the Yochel Merish Chodesh section. Okay, so now he's established the time. It's interesting to note that the Rambam starts off by saying that the mitzvah of Sipur is derived from the term zachar, to remember. then when he goes on to establish the time, he uses the pasuk of Vigarta Levincha. And Vigarta Levincha is connected to Matzah and Mara. So that's how I know that it's on the night of the 15th, because that's the time of Matzah and Mara. And thus I know that the mitzvah of Vigarta is on the 15th. But now the pasuk of Vigarta is serving as the pasuk which establishes the mitzvah of Sipur. So we have to sort of iron that out. So now he's introduced us to another idea of Vigarta Levincha, which I would not have thought of just from the first sentence. The first sentence is talking about Zachar. And I would not have necessarily thought that Zachar has to involve others or that it has to involve children. Now he's introduced us to Vigarta Levincha. So V'yafal pi she'ein lo ben. Now he's telling you, even though he doesn't have a child. Apparently the Rambam saw fit to tell us that you might think that if I don't have a child, I'm exempted from this mitzvah. I don't know why. So now he's coming to disabuse us of that notion, so to speak. Even if you don't have a child. Even afilu chacham gedolim. Even great chachamim. Chayavim l'saper b'tzias Mitzrayim. Are obligated to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well, all these things, obviously, how do they hit you? What's your reaction to this? Yeah. These points are not so simple. I mean, they are simple. That's the problem. They're obvious, of course. Well, why would you think that Chacham Gedolim are exempted from mitzvot? That's a strange notion. Who is supposed to... just the opposite. The Chacham Gedolim, of course, do the mitzvot. Is there such a concept in Judaism that you reach a certain point in time where that's it, you become exempted from the mitzvot because you're such a Chacham? There's no mitzvah like that. There are a number of questions over here, but step by step. You have to approach it in an organized fashion. How did the Rambam slip in this idea of the child, the Yigadta Levincha, after he told us that the mitzvah is Zachar? Then, having said that, apparently, he had to tell us that even though you don't have a child. And then he slips in something which is seemingly more astounding, and that is that even if you're a great Chacham, that's an important theme in the Haggadah, as you know. That's the whole purpose of which paragraph, of which little story that's contained. Maisa, right? Maisa, the different rabbis who gathered in B'nai Brak. That's to illustrate this point. That's the whole idea, that these were the greatest Chachamim. And they, not just that they, it's more than just that point, that they performed the mitzvah, but the manner in which they performed the mitzvah, that they were immersed in the story all night long until they actually forgot. They forgot that it was time to say Kriya Shema. Why does it have to mention that? There's a very important point over there. V'chalam arach b'dvarim she'iru, then he adds this point that the more v'chalam arach, that it's not a perfunctory kind of a mitzvah. It's a very unusual kind of a mitzvah. In what sense is it unusual? Most mitzvahs are pretty much clearly demarcated. The mitzvah of eating matzah, for example, he's not going to say if you're marach, if you extend yourself, if you do more than is required. It's praiseworthy. You can't. The mitzvah is to eat matzah. Then, of course, you have to ask how much matzah. So it's a kazayas. The mitzvah is to shake the lulav. The mitzvah, most mitzvahs have lines of demarcation, and that's it. You can't do more. Perhaps you could do it with greater understanding and attention. Kavana, sure. The quality of the performance varies from person to person, but that's not marach, to extend the quantitative. So this mitzvah lends itself to extension. Marach, you could do it, you could fulfill the mitzvah in a simple way, quickly, maybe perfunctory, maybe not so perfunctory, and that's it. Or you could get involved in it and keep going. Keeping going over here is apparently a big mitzvah. It's very, very important. So he says, I raise a meshubach. This is praiseworthy. Our halacha beis, mitzvah lahodiyah labanim. It is a mitzvah to inform the children. V'afilu lo shalu. And even if they didn't ask. So again, you might have thought that that's only if they asked. But if they didn't ask, you're exempt. Nope, it doesn't matter. Shenemar v'yigarta l'mincha. You shall declare it, you shall tell it to your children. L'fidaito shel ben aviv melamdo. In accordance with the das of the ben, the father teaches him. Now listen carefully to the next thing. Ketzad, he gives an example over here. Im hoya katan, if he was very, very young, otipesh, or he wasn't developed. Omer lo, he says to him, bini. So what the Rambam is, I think, is very, very important, because a lot of times parents ask the question, at what point am I obligated to teach the child? How old does the child have to be? And today, with preschooling and everything, you know, you can work out something with the kid, even if the kid doesn't truly understand it. How much does the child have to be capable of understanding before you actually fulfill the mitzvah? Then there's nothing wrong with taking a kid, even a kid that doesn't understand, and it makes an impression on them, because that forms an impression in their unconscious. Chazal said that when children are very young, you're supposed to give them treats on Shabbos. Because even though they may not understand what it's about, but it'll leave a mark. It'll leave it, as they get older, they'll have a pleasant association with the day. And that will impel them to want to observe the day properly. That's where it starts at. Education in very early youth has to do with creating very positive, pleasant impressions with regard to everything that has to do with Judaism. It shouldn't be negative that you yell at a kid or something like that because he's not behaving properly in shul. If that's his earliest experiences of shul, he's going to have a bad sense. But these things have an effect later on. So then, if that's the case, he's not ready for shul. And so on and so forth. You have to use your judgment over here. At what point, however, aside from pre-education, do you actually fulfill the mitzvah? The child is a very important individual at the player, so to speak, at the Seder. The child is probably the most important. Because that's the real proper performance of the mitzvah is not when you're alone or even with friends, but it's with a child. That is the highest level of performance of the mitzvah. And it doesn't have to be your own child necessarily. Obviously, first and foremost, your own, but it could be someone else's child. And by the way, child doesn't have to mean in terms of age. Someone, a Jew that's not observant, that has very little exposure to Judaism, and they want to come to a Seder to learn, that becomes a child. It's a big mitzvah. That's, so to speak, the night of Kirov as well. I'm serious about that. That's really the time to do Kirov. Not to say you shouldn't do it other times, but this is when it becomes a mitzvah saseh, midyaraisa. Omer lo, he says to him, Bini, my son, kulanu hayinu avadim. We were all slaves. Kamo shifchazu. Just like this servant. That is, assuming that he has someone in the house. But even if he didn't have anybody, I explain what would be the equivalent today. Today we don't really have a shivcha that would correspond, that would be an illustration for the child. However, even if it's a picture, a prisoner, you can have a picture of a slave. If you have a picture of a slave in one of these children's books, it doesn't have to be a physical individual that's actually functionally a slave right now. Because what do you mean? In a situation, in a society where there's no slaves, you can't illustrate the points? Anything. It means an illustration. So the child already is familiar, has books, what has seen movies, understands the concept. So we were all slaves, just like this shivcha. Oh, kamo eved, or this slave, b'mitzrayim. Uvalayla hazeh. And on that night, Pada Osono HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God redeemed us, Vayotzienu L'Cheiros, and removed us into freedom. So that's what seemed to be the most minimal level. What does it mean? It means that the child has to be capable of relating to which idea? The idea of slavery and the idea of freedom. A child that has not reached a level that it can conceive of the state, doesn't understand what slavery is yet, that there is such a state. And of course, the state of freedom, it would seem at that point you can't fulfill the mitzvah. So the bare bones, so to speak, at the most minimal, if you convey to the child that we were all like that as a people, again, it would seem that the child, kulanu, who's kulanu over here? Does that mean the child also has a concept of a Jewish people? That's pretty much what it means. The child realizes that it's not just his own family, but there is such a thing as Jews. Klal Yisrael. Good. Klal Yisrael. We. Yeah. It's interesting to note that if the mitzvah is to discuss the miracles, the Sapir Benisim V'Nivlo is to discuss the miracles, he hasn't mentioned the miracles over here in telling the child. I might have thought that, okay, this I understand this. This is a good formulation. To tell him the story of the Exodus means he has to recognize the idea of enslavement and freedom. But the Rambam said you have to discuss the miraculous, and he didn't mention that the child understands the miraculous. Then he says, "Im haya ben gadol v'chacham," and if the child was an adult and a chacham and wise, "Modio mashi irulan b'mitzrayim," then of course he has to give much more information. He teaches him what happened to us in Mitzrayim, "Venisim shenasu lanu," and the miracles that happened to us. Here he mentions miracles, so it's clear that in the most minimal formulation, you do fulfill it without miracles. Shenasu lanu al yidei Moshe Rabbeinu, that were done via Moshe Rabbeinu. It's also, you have to mention that the miracles don't just come in a haphazard way. There's a specific system and it entails certain great individuals. You have to inform them about Moshe Rabbeinu. That's part of it as well. Hakol lefi daito shel ben, everything in accordance with the das of the ben, with the knowledge of the ben. So then, let's just see if we can deal with some of these questions. We have a lot of questions. Let's see if we can get some resolution. First of all, there's a certain ambivalence over here with regard to two things. First of all, what is the mitzvah itself? Is it to talk about the history, or is it to emphasize the miracles? He starts off by saying the miracles, puts the miracle center stage. Then, however, when he's talking about telling it over, and he's telling you at what point, what is the most minimal point at which you fulfill it with regard to the child, he says, as long as the child can understand freedom and slavery and freedom. But what? And then, of course, he says, if the child is older, if he's an adult, if he's a mature adult, so then you tell him about the Nisim and the Nefloth. Then you tell him about the miracles. But if the miracles are the essence, so then how does that work? Also, the Rambam seems to be using two different psukim. He starts off with Zachar, and then he uses Vigar Tlevincha to tell it to your children. And of course, finally, I want to get to where I started. The point that I started with is, what is so significant about these particular miracles that for the Rambam they become pretty much like the essence of what it's all about? The whole idea of the Rambam, that it goes in accordance with the das of the Ben, that's a very important idea. You would say, of course, that's the case. Now, you might have thought that basically my obligation is just to transmit some piece of information. And that's it. No, but it's really to teach, to instruct. That's the essential responsibility, to transmit Yahadus. And Yahadus, the essence of Yahadus is Lahavin or Lahora, to understand. And the greater the understanding, the greater the level of fulfillment, the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes through understanding of Torah. And that's why, obviously, you have to be an astute teacher and you have to be attuned to the level of the child. The Haggadah talks about different mentalities, the Arba Banim, the different types of child and how they approach the material, and you have to take that into consideration. You can't just have one standard approach and that's it. Whoever likes it, whoever doesn't, doesn't. But no, that's contrary to the obligation in terms of teaching. You have to take into consideration different emotions, different attitudes, and formulate a method of elucidation which is in line with the person's makeup. Then, along with the questions we're asking, is does the Rambam formulate the mitzvah of Zohar and the mitzvah of Vigarata as one mitzvah or two mitzvahs? In the Rambam's formulation, which is brought down at the very beginning, right before we begin Perek Rishon, mitzvah, the last mitzvah in the year, eight mitzvahs pertaining to Pesach. L'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim b'yoso alayla. To tell the Exodus story on that night. the basic mitzvah of the night is from Zohar. It's Lesaper, Benisim, and Flos. And interestingly enough, what if the person's all by himself? The question arises, does this mitzvah require another individual? Because in ordinary parlance, telling over a story, you have to have someone you're telling it to. And the Rambam takes up that question. The Rambam at the end of Halacha Gimel talks about the whole format of question and answer. The method of communication on that night, the method is through question and answer, not through lecturing. So primarily the child, that's why you have the mitzvah of karpas, to elicit questions, to make the changes of the night, that's the shinuyim of the night, to stimulate questions. That's the whole purpose of many of the things we do. And you have to introduce your own changes. He, the Rambam mentions chotfin matzism. They would take the matzah from each person's hand. Just so the child is, what are you doing? Why? Then he says, ain lo ben, ishto shoalto. If he doesn't have a son, then his wife asks him, ain lo isha, sholem zezeh. If he's not married, then they ask each other. Then he says, afilu hayu kulon chacham, even if they were all wise, haya levado. Haya levado. What does a person do who's all alone? Which is not the state you should be in on Pesach. But it could happen. It could happen that you're all alone. So what do you do? Now the Rambam's answer is very, very, again, unexpected. You would not have thought of it. You would have said, he tells it over to himself. No, show Eliatzmo. He asks himself. That sounds funny, but he's talking to himself. He's asking himself questions. It's sort of like a schizophrenic kind of an experience. He becomes two personalities. Is that what he means? Haya levado, show Eliatzmo. That's a big chiddush. Manishtan halaylaze. He starts talking to himself. What you see from the halacha of Haya levado is that the mitzvah of Sipu Yitzhak Mitzrayim is not essentially connected with other people. Essentially, the mitzvah is for yourself to be engaged in the review, the telling of a story. So you tell it to yourself. I mean, you review, you have to be immersed in the phenomena of the Laila. That's the Zohar. That's why it's Zohar. If the Pasuk was only Vigad Lamincha, then it would only be a situation. It would be a situational phenomenon. If there's a situation of children. So the primary mitzvah, the category, is really Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, even for yourself. To review, of course, for yourself, I don't know if you use the word discuss, because discussion has to do with others, but you yourself, if you're alone on that night, have to review all the ideas. The Rambam says you do it through the mechanism of question and answer. You ask yourself the question. It doesn't mean you have to recite the questions out loud, but methodologically speaking, there's a certain method that you have to utilize. The question and answer method is the method that one should use. But clearly the mitzvah is for the individual to engage in the activity of studying the ideas, the nisim v'niflaos of that night. So that's the essence of the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Igarta Levincha, however, it's not a separate mitzvah, but it is a compartment. It's a category of this mitzvah. That is to say that if you're in a situation of bincha, you have children, so then the chiyuv expresses itself in a manner of communication to the children. You understand what I'm saying? So that will define for you how you are to engage in the mitzvah. You have a chiyuv of telling your story, of engaging in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in a framework of communicating it to your children. And to your children, as we see, can be a broader idea. Children is not limited just to the biological child. Although that, halakhically speaking, of course, they come first. But it means other Jews, fellow Jews. So there are two reasons why other people are involved. One reason is because in and of itself, the mitzvah of Sipur on the highest possible level is to discuss it with others. That's the story of the great, even great rabbis. Even great rabbis, even great chachamim can always gain. There's no such thing. That whole question as to why would a great scholar have to study the area is because it's a misnomer. There's no such thing as a person who's exhausted a topic. That's just a relative thing. There's no such thing as an authority that knows the subject. We're just learning more. I mean, it's just compared to people who know less. A person's an authority. But to say that he's exhausted the topic, he can't learn from this, that's an absurdity. And the other factor, so insofar as the mitzvah of Zachar is concerned on the highest level, so then you should discuss it with others. But that's not v'igar to levincha. That if two Talmidei Chachamim get together to discuss the story of the Sipur, that's not v'igar to levincha, that's part of the Zachar mitzvah. But a component of the mitzvah is to be mekayim v'igar to levincha. So v'igar to levincha is a further demarcation of the mitzvah. That if you, first of all, if you have children, you have a chiyuv. It's a chiyuv upon you. If you don't have children, you can have the kiyum. You can have the fulfillment of v'igar to levincha by teaching somebody else's child, or by teaching any fellow Jew who's in need of the instruction. That's a component of the mitzvah, but it doesn't form the essence of the mitzvah. So that if that were the case, then a person that doesn't have children, that's what the Rambam said, even if he doesn't have a child, you might think that the very essence of the mitzvah has to do with transmitting it to a child. And if you don't have a child, you're putter. No. The mitzvah is zachar, primary. Within the framework of zachar, there's a component of v'igadat levincha. Now you'll be able to explain the discrepancy we had before. The Rambam starts off by saying that the nisim and nifloos is part of the essence. And then he goes on to incorporate, okay, v'igarta. Then he tells you the minimal level at which the child becomes eligible for sipur. So there he says, as long as he can understand slaves and freedom. He doesn't mention, so you tell him that. He tells you what you tell him. My son, we were all slaves, just like the slave here, and God took us out on this night. What about the miracles? Would seem that miracles is something else. A child has to be capable of understanding miracles. Miracles is not so simple. He has to understand such a thing as the laws of nature. And then there's miracles. So what happened to miracles? Then he says that if the child is mature and a chacham, then you tell him the nisim and nifloos. But our question is, if the nisim and nifloos are essential, so then how can he say that even if the child just understands the bare bones, slavery and freedom, you fulfill the mitzvah? But how can you? There's no story of miracles. So I think the answer would be that the essence of the mitzvah of Zohar, where a person has to be immersed, review the ideas of the events that took place on that night, there he must have, in conjunction with the discussion of the miracles and the significance of the miracles. However, the component of v'igarta levincha, that's something else. That means to say that on that night, he has to use this story as the backdrop to communicate to the child, to transmit the foundations of the Jewish religion, quote unquote. We examine the foundations of the religion on that night, which again makes Judaism unique, because there's no other religion that examines its foundations. To the contrary, they want to not examine that. You should accept it on faith, and that's it. But in Judaism, the whole night is dedicated to establishing the foundation. There has to be a foundation which makes sense, which we discuss, which we analyze, which we think into. It's based on Yediyah. That process begins. When does that process begin? With the child, when he's very young. As he gets older, you discuss the miraculous element. So that's because the v'igat levincha is a separate component of the mitzvah of Zachar. It doesn't mean that with regard to the child is fulfilling every aspect of Zachar. The child is not bar mitzvah yet. He doesn't have the chiyuv of Zachar yet. It means to say that he sort of is an object, so to speak, for the mitzvah of v'igat levincha, that you transmit to him the foundations. So this is a foundation. How much does he have to understand to be able to receive it? The basic idea of slavery and freedom. Then as he gets older, of course you incorporate the miraculous. But that's not a contradiction, because this is just one element of your mitzvah of Zachar. And of course you have to have reference to the other aspects. It doesn't mean, also by the way, it doesn't mean to say that you fulfilled your chiyuv of Zachar. Let's say you have little children. So you should spend time with them. You should spend time with them and talk to them, even individually or together, whatever it is. Then you fulfill the mitzvah of Igarat L'mincha. But let's say you did it on a very elementary level. Does that mean that that's it? Now you can eat your meal? No, then you have your own Seder, which is the intelligent thing to do. I mean, a lot of times it's a problem because you have adults, You may have friends at the Seder, and there also may be children there. So this becomes difficult for the one who's leading the Seder. Because V'igat L'mincha is very, very important. Spend time with the child. So, but if you do that, then obviously it's not going to be that advanced and sophisticated. So this a bit of a sacrifice in terms of the depth of your own Seder experience. I think the thing to do is to do both. You speak to the children in accordance with how much they can bear, how much they can take, and then they get tired. Then you should discuss it on a higher level. So even though when you told it to the child, you may not have described the miracles, but that doesn't matter. You fulfilled your obligation of transmitting. However, when you engage in your own sefer, then of course you have to bring in the miracles. The mitzvah of Igarat HaLevincha is to transmit the Exodus story, because that story contains the foundation. He may not understand why at this point it contains the foundation. That's when he gets older. There'll be elucidation. Just because he knows that there was an Exodus doesn't mean that he has the entire foundation. But your mitzvah is to transmit that story. It goes in stages. First he has to get the story. Then as he gets older, he may ask questions about the story. Well, why did we become slaves in the first place? What did we do? Did we do anything to deserve it? And so on and so forth. Why did God redeem us? Etc. But the mitzvah of transmission has a certain system to it, a certain order. Your basic obligation is to transmit the story. That's what the Rambam is saying. So as soon as the child is able to understand just that minimum, that God took us out of Egypt, we were slaves, you fulfilled your objective for that year. As he gets older, you'll add to it. But there's got to be a foundation, doesn't there? Chinuch begins with a foundation. With regard to the issue of the Nisim and Niflaos, why they're so significant, and they play such a prominent role in the story. As I said, the Rambam puts the whole emphasis on the miraculous. Now there's a Ramban on Shemos, and the Aseres Adibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hoticha Me'aretz Mitzrayim, B'beis Avadim. Of course, that's the foundation of foundations, and that, by the way, is the first mitzvah, to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I am the Lord your God. But there's a famous question that everybody asks, that why is God saying, I am the God who took you out of Egypt from the house of slavery? What should it have said? Who created heaven and earth? Creator of heaven and earth. That's the primary reason. That's the primary phenomenon. That's the primary, so to speak, identity. We can't really give an identity to God, but the creator, the being, everything that exists because of him, because of his will, creation. But instead of mentioning that, it mentions who took you out of Egypt. So the Ramban talks about this. And he says that this dibur, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, is a positive command, as we know. Amar Anochi Hashem, Yoreh Vitzava Osam, to teach and command them, Sheyedu V'yaminu. Here again, the very, very important word. It doesn't just say that they should believe, Sheyedu V'yaminu, they should know and believe. Which, again, it could seem, what do you mean? Belief is one thing, knowing is another thing. Well, just to make a long story short, but the basic idea is it's that the belief, it's not a belief that just comes to you out of nowhere, it's just not an emotional whim, but it's a result of, it's a hamana, it's an amuna which comes from your knowledge. Ki yesh Hashem, that there exists Hashem, exists, v'hu Elokim lachem, and he's a God unto you. Kolomar, hove v'kadmon, he exists, but v'kadmon, he's eternal. So the mitzvah is referring to the eternity of God. Very, very important idea. Be'ito hoya hakol, everything came from him, b'chefetz v'cholas, with will, with intention. It's making an extremely important point. It's not that just there's a God that exists, but what's the relationship between that being and everything in this world? That's the crucial point. That, and this is what the Rambam puts down in the Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, that our concept of God is that God is the only existence. Hu Elokeinu Eino, there's no other being. And that everything that exists only because of him, because of his will, that he willed it into existence, and it retains existence only as long as his will relates to it. Such that, he says, if we could imagine, If we can imagine that everything except for him would cease to exist, then he, blessed be he, would exist because he's not dependent upon anything that he's created. It's not because he needs us. It's his will, which is unfathomable, that he brings us into existence and gives us an opportunity for existence, which of course is dependent on how we use our free will, whether we'll have that phenomenon or not. But he says if it could be imagined that he would not exist, if it could be imagined, it can't, but I mean, it could be, you could imagine such a thing intellectually, then everything would cease to exist. Because everything exists only because of his will. He's the true existence. So there's no basis for existence in anything else except outside of his will. That's different than merely saying there's a God, or that there's a God and that God knows what we do and this God can punish us. That's not the same thing. If you maintain that we have a certain basis of existence outside of the God, then you're denying the fundamental of beyond us. You could be saying, well, yeah, there's other powers out there and they're just stronger than we are. That's not the idea. The idea is that everything came from God with will, with intention. V'hu Elokim lahem, and he is a God unto them. Shechayavim lavodoso, that they are obliged to serve him. Now, on this basis, you can understand Asher Hotzeisem Eretz Mitzrayim. You'll understand why in the Seres Divis it refers to the Yetzias Mitzrayim, not to creation. Ki Hotzeisem Misham, because they're leaving Egypt, Torah al Hamatzius v'al Hachefetz. This illustrates God's existence and will. Because with knowledge and with providence, from him did we leave there. That is to say, the event, of course God is the creator, but in terms of the framework of mankind, how we recognize, we encounter the existence of God from the story of the Exodus. Because that's something which was an impossibility, a physical impossibility for the Jews to be freed from that type of slavery and oppression through any natural phenomena. So that clearly indicates God's aware, God's knowledge of everything that exists, God's purpose, that this is contrary to God's purposes, and God's power to direct what should happen in this world. However, there's another very, very crucial point. Now, before I go to the next point, I just have to give you a little bit of a background. That there were great philosophers, of course, that acknowledged the existence of God. For example, Aristotle. Aristotle believed in God, but his concept of God is different than our God. And many great scientists, I think, have a similar concept. Most of the great scientists throughout history believed in God. Einstein, for example, he was very religious in that sense. He writes about the experience, like a mystical experience, when he perceives the wonders of God and he studies physics. So he's very religious. But his idea of God is different. Essentially, Aristotle's view was that the world is eternal. That's a whole separate discussion, which I'm not taking up now, but he didn't believe in creation, yesh me'ayin. So he maintained that the world coexists with God. There's a relationship between God and the world, but simplistically speaking, it would be, of course, God is superior, but the very existence of God demands the existence of the universe. It's connected to the existence of God in a similar fashion. The shadow and the door. The door casts a shadow, or the building casts a shadow. So, of course, the building is the cause of the shadow, but it coexists. You can't imagine one without the other. That's loosely speaking his formulation. That is not the view of the Torah. That's not the view of the Torah. It's Bereshis Bara, creation. Now, what are some of the practical differences? Obviously, with regard to this phenomenon of Hashkacha, or it's a question of Yediyah, whether God, I mean, according to Aristotle's system, is God aware of what's going on? Is there such a thing as direction? Is there such a thing as providence? Is there such a thing as miracles? So if that is your view of the key question is not so much whether there's a God or not. Most of the great philosophers may affirm God. The uniqueness of Judaism is with a different question. The question is, what's the relationship between man and God? What's the relationship between our lives and the existence of God? What's the relationship between the world and God? Does God play a role in the affairs of mankind? That's the key question. It's a key question in general, because most people are not that interested in abstract philosophy. The question is, should I serve God or not? For most people, it has to do with this question: does God play a role in my life? A key area of difference would be with regard to the question of miracles. Is there such a thing as miracles? Can there be miracles? Given the underlying nature of reality, is it amenable to a situation of miracles? Well, obviously, you could see yourself, if your attitude is that the world is eternal, that it wasn't created, but somehow or other, it has to exist. Its existence is determined by the existence of God. You can't imagine the existence of God without the world. You see how the Rambam refuted that. He said, if we could imagine that the world didn't exist, then he wouldn't exist. If we imagined he didn't exist, there couldn't be a world. The world, now, if the world must exist, so then there can't be any changes, because everything is the way it is, because that's the way it has to be. Because it's part of the very nature of God, determines the laws of nature, and that's it, they can't be changed. But if the Creator decided, b'chefetz, with will, with yediyah, with knowledge, determined, set up the world that it should work in a certain manner, so then he retains complete power over the world, and he can change it, he can regulate it at will. That's the key issue. The key issue as to whether there's such a thing as divine providence, whether, that's the whole story of Pesach. It's not whether God exists or doesn't exist so much as whether God relates to the world. Is there such a thing as divine providence? Does God play a role in the affairs of mankind? That's what the Egyptians were denying. This has nothing to do with any God. These are just accidents of nature. That was what was being established. So I share the whole significance of the miracles of Mitzrayim. They take on a tremendous significance because they were intended to demonstrate not just the existence of God, but creation, the idea of creation itself. Because this is possible only because God created the world from nothing, set it up according to the laws of nature. So if that's the case, God retains complete awareness of what's going on. And God has a purpose in the world, and God changes the situation to bring about His will. That's what the significance of, he says, the Gam Torah al HaChidush, the Ramban, getting back to the Ramban, that the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim gives evidence of Chidush. What's Chidush? Creation, as opposed to eternity. He says, Ki Im Kadmus HaOlam, because with the eternity of the world, Lo Yishtana Dov Mitevo. Then nothing can change from its teva, because teva is absolute, because everything is the way it is, because that's the way it has to be. And because it stems from the nature of God. And just like God is unchangeable, so is the world unchangeable. If you maintain that the existence of the world is determined by the existence of God, it can't be any other way. So just like God is unchangeable, everything that emanates from God is unchangeable. But if it's a different picture, the relationship between God and the world is different, is distant. It's something which God decides he wants to do. I'm just using descriptive terms. We can't even say God decides. Can't talk about God. This is just in a manner of description. God brings it into being. God removes it from existence. That's the whole story of the flood, is that if the mankind doesn't fulfill its purpose, so God will terminate the world. Because that's the phenomenon of free will. The Torah al Yecholas, it illustrates, it instructs us in God's power. And then this leads us back to the idea of the unity of God. All right. So these are the fundamental foundations. Kemo Shamra, as it says, Bavurteda ki en kamoni. The pasuk. Now you go back to the psukim describing in Shemos. In order, when God says that to tell Paro that he's going to bring this plague, Lamaya, Bavurteda ki en kamoni, that there's no one like me. B'chol ha'aretz. And of course, V'zeh tam asher utaisicha. Now you understand why it says that I took you out, Kihem, Heim HaYodim. Because the Jews are the ones that know this. V'edim. We experienced it. Why is it a chiv upon us to accept the Dibros? That's because we experienced it. So we stand in a different relationship to the phenomena than other people. Now I think we can understand the Rambam's formulation. That, of course, the mitzvah is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story of the Exodus. But what the Rambam is saying is that you have to appreciate the full significance of that Sipur and the role it plays. What does it do? What type of beliefs, what type of knowledge, what type of ideas and doctrines emerge from that? So it's not just a story that there's oppression and that's not good, and it's like God punished Paro. That's true, but when you tell the story, you have to be able to realize from that story the significant philosophical concepts or theological, whatever you want to call them, that are formulated in the Asaras HaDibros. This idea of God, the correct idea, the correct notion of God as the creator and Yesh Mayayin, and what the significance of that is, as opposed to a false idea of the eternity of the universe. A person who has the idea of the eternity of the universe, even though he believes in God, is negating Torah. That is an incorrect notion of God and an incorrect notion of the relationship between the creator and the creation. So that's, I think, why the Rambam says, L'sapre b'nisim v'nivlos, you must hit those points. You must be engaged not just in the historical aspects, but the miraculous aspect, because the miraculous aspect over here is establishing fundamentals in terms of our whole concept of God and his relationship to the world.